From Feature Story News in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports.
I would argue there's no more important state-to-state relationship for 21st century security, stability, you name it, than between the two great powers of the US and China.
On this special holiday edition of FSN Reports, we journey into the rapidly expanding realm of cybersecurity. Award-winning author Peter Singer helps us navigate the many forms of cyber realities, from the anonymous hacker group, the ongoing cyber conflict between the US and China, and why it's probably time you rethought your password.
As long as we're using the internet, we will have cybersecurity and cyber war issues to deal with. And so what we need to do is change our mentality towards it, understand the issues, and then we can better manage them.
That's our extended interview with Peter Singer after a summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Dan Whitehead. Iran has started curbing its enrichment of uranium, according to the UN nuclear watchdog, the IAEA. It's part of a deal with the US, Russia, China and European powers struck last November. It will now lead to the easing of international sanctions on Iran, thought to be worth as much as $7 billion US dollars to the Iranian community. Well, UK Foreign Secretary William Hague, speaking in Brussels, says if Iran sticks to the agreement, all will benefit.
We will be fulfilling our side of the deal, the suspension of those sanctions listed in the agreement with Iran. Of course, other sanctions will be maintained. This is limited and proportionate sanctions relief. And then we will get to work at a very early stage, as early as next month, on the negotiation of a comprehensive deal to settle the Iranian nuclear issue.
Meanwhile, an invitation for Iran to attend the peace talks on Syria is now threatening the chances of it taking place. The main Syrian opposition group, the National Coalition, is threatening to boycott the talks, which are due to take place later this week. It comes after the United Nations Secretary General said Syria's long-term ally, Iran, should take part in the discussions. Nick Harper reports from New York.
The National Coalition saying it may now not attend the talks is a big blow and threatens weeks of diplomatic wrangling to get their officials to the negotiating table. The opposition group had only just finally agreed to come to Switzerland for the conference in the last 2 days. However, Ban Ki-moon feels Iran has to be involved despite its support of the Assad regime.
I believe strongly that Iran needs to be part of the solution to the Syrian crisis.
The Secretary General said he'd been assured Iran is committed to finding a new government for Syria. But with the talks now only 2 days away, they appear in jeopardy before they've even started. Nick Harper, New York.
The mayor of the Central African Republic capital, Bangui, Catherine Samba-Panza, has been elected as the country's interim president. It makes her the first woman to hold the post. It comes as EU foreign ministers agreed on Monday to send troops to the Central African Republic as violence continues there. Nearly a million people have been forced from their homes following conflict between Christians and Muslims. Credit card details from 20 million South Koreans have been stolen and sold to marketing firms. The names, social security numbers and card details of nearly half of all South Koreans were stolen by a computer contractor who'd been working for a company that produced credit scores in the country. The contractor and managers at the marketing firms that allegedly bought the data have been arrested. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. The UK is to ban unemployed migrants from within the European Union from receiving housing benefit. It's the latest clampdown by London on so-called benefit tourism within the EU. Our UK correspondent Ollie Barrett reports.
From April this year, EU migrants without jobs will be removed from entitlement to housing benefits and they'll only be able to claim the Job Seekers Allowance benefit for 6 months. The government says it wants to ensure migrants don't take unfair advantage of the system by claiming benefits from the moment they arrive in the UK. The opposition Labour Party says it is broadly supportive, but also says the vast majority of foreigners who come to the UK do so to work hard and contribute to the economy. The new ban comes after restrictions on Bulgarians and Romanians working in the UK were eased at the beginning of the year. The government says migrants can no longer expect to come to the UK and get something for nothing.
Two students who ran away from a boarding school in the north of England have been found in the Dominican Republic. Police confirmed that the teenagers, both aged 16, were safe and well. Plans are now underway for Edward Bunyan and Indira Genyan to be flown back to the UK. Natalie Feary has the details from London.
The students were last seen on the 13th of January at a UK airport, but it was several days before police tracked them down at a hotel in the Punta Cana area of the Dominican Republic. Police have said that once the teenagers return to England, they will be debriefed and then there will be no further police involvement. The headmaster of the school where the pair are pupils, Andrew Johnson, said he was delighted they had been found after concerns grew about their safety. He added that discussions would take place with the students and their families regarding their return to Stonyhurst College and that it was too early to speculate about the future.
And that's the latest from Feature Story News, Dan Whitehead reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports.
America must also face the rapidly growing threat from cyber attacks. Now, we know hackers steal people's identities, infiltrate private emails. We know foreign countries and companies swipe our corporate secrets. Now our enemies are also seeking the ability to sabotage our power grid, our financial institutions, our air traffic control systems. We cannot look back years from now and wonder why we did nothing in the face of real threats to our security and our economy.
President Obama addressing the concerns of cybersecurity during last year's State of the Union address. From communication to conflict, the global importance of cybersecurity is growing rapidly. My guest for this special edition of FSN Reports explains why all of us, from governments to grandmothers, need to be ready for the dangers lurking online. The book is called Cybersecurity and Cyber War, What Everyone Needs to Know, and I began by asking co-author Peter Singer if the contents of the book will give people nightmares.
My goodness, I hope that's not the case, because it's almost the exact opposite goal of the book. The book goes into the very real threats that are out there. And, you know, look, it helps make it interesting as well. And, you know, the fascinating stories of, you know, everything from serious dangers and attacks, understanding Stuxnet, which is this historic new weapon that came out in our lifetime that people don't really know enough about, to using funny incidents to explain how the internet works, like the time that Pakistan accidentally kidnapped the world's cute cat videos for several hours. But the underlying point of the book, not to give away where we end on, but essentially is that when we're talking about cybersecurity issues, too much of the discourse has been either incredibly technical and so, you know, exclusionary to those of us that are not in the IT crowd, not the IT folks, or it's been like, you know, the movie Spinal Tap, you know, turn the volume up to 11, get scared. Sure. And oh, by the way, I've got the secret sauce solution for you, or I'm the man on horseback who's going to come rescue you. And instead, the ending of the book is, and what it walks through is how, as long, we need to recognize, as long as we are using the internet, and when I say we, that means everything from us as individuals, our kids, our businesses, our governments, you name it. As long as we're using the internet, we will have cybersecurity and cyber war issues to deal with. And so what we need to do is change our mentality towards it, understand the issues, and then we can better manage them. And so I hope the book is entertaining, but it's also a toolkit for, it walks through the key questions of, you know, how does this all work? Why does this all matter? And the last third of the book is, what can we do? There are things that we can do. And importantly, they're not incredibly complex or out of our reach.
You just mentioned cute cats and Pakistan. We can't just leave that hanging in the air like that. Tell us what happened in that instance.
What that episode it played out back in 2008 was Pakistan was trying to, it took advantage of that trust. It was trying to restrict certain things that were on YouTube. And so to put it in layman's terms, its computers were communicating a false address for YouTube, and so all the other networks that were linking in they trusted that information was accurate, and they weren't. It was trying to block it, and so they started sending all their requests and information. And the irony here is, not only did they accidentally kidnap all the Cute Cat videos, but they also overwhelmed their own networks unintentionally. And it's, again, the underlying issue here is the importance of trust. Now, it's a fun story, but it's a great connection to some of the major concerns that we have out there today. So the story of Cute Cats, it's a great, entertaining, fun way of connecting to some of the underlying fundamentals that matter in the system, and talking about how we don't just need to understand them, but we also need to worry about what will happen to them over the next several years.
For a lot of people listening, cybersecurity perhaps has a more personal meaning, and that's just the simple everyday protection of their laptops or their PCs and their personal information, their private information. That's what they're more worried about, perhaps, than what's happening in terms of the NSA or WikiLeaks or the infiltration of the Chinese government. But for them, for people like me, isn't it simply a case of, once you have a McAfee or a Norton antivirus, then it's job done, you're safe?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I feared you might say that.
So you've hit it really well. Cyber issues, they, you know, are connecting to topics as weighty as the future of world politics and, you know, the relationship between the two great powers of US and China, to cyber terrorism fears. But it also hits us at our own personal level, the security of our bank accounts, concerns about privacy, what are our kids doing online. And note again, you know, these issues go back up the level, you know. The question of our own personal privacy, it matters to me as an individual, but it also connects to, you know, what should I should be thinking about these NSA things, and what am I going to vote on it? But the underlying lesson, and in the book we, you know, the parts about what can we do, it goes from the international to the national to the business to the, you know, organization, all the way down to you and I. What can we do? And importantly, it's key to understand that this is both the problems and the solutions are not about the software. They're not about the hardware. They're about the wetware. They're about the people. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get a solution from, you know, buying some secret sauce software. You're not going to get a solution from some new widget. Frankly, you're not even going to get a solution if you try and disconnect. It's about the way you approach things and the very human activities that you take, the organization you're in, the incentives. And so in the book, we go through some of the very key steps that people can take, from changing your mentality from, you know, defense to resilience. Resilience, you know, think about it in terms of, you know, your human body. So in the book, we go through everything from, you know, good password security. Still the most popular password out there is passwords. The second most popular is 12345. Having different passwords for different accounts so that attackers can't daisy chain across them, which would protect a lot of people in the recent hacks of, you know, things from Target to Snapchat.
Well, I hope my mother's listening, because I think you just gave out both of her passwords.
recently, my dad emailed me to say, well, don't worry, I have this certain kind of metric for my passwords. And I was like, Dad, you just emailed me that.
Right. So practice cyber hygiene, like you would look after your own health, look after the health of your cyber activity. That makes perfect sense, I think.
It's an interesting point, because too often we try and overcomplexify this, and frankly, entities, you know, take advantage of our ignorance. It's not, you know, at the individual level, it's the hacker tricking you into clicking that link that you shouldn't have, or, you know, that email that you got from your mother saying, can you send me your bank account information? I'm stranded in Thailand. And you're like, oh, I didn't know mom was in Thailand, but I guess she needs my help. You know, there's actually a fairly easy solution to that. It's this amazing technology that this guy named Alexander Graham Bell invented, where, you know, guess what? Take the time to, when you're suspicious about it, call. If it turns out to be wrong, mom will be glad that you called. To look, the most important outside penetration of U.S. military networks by a foreign intelligence agency happened when a soldier found a memory stick in the dirt of a parking lot and thought it was a good idea to pick that memory stick up, take it into the military base, and plug it into his computer. Again, to go back to, you know, that's not just a violation of cyber hygiene. That's a violation of basic hygiene. That's the 5-second rule. To, you know, the most recent episodes of WikiLeaks with Manning or Snowden, whatever you think about these individuals and their disclosures, we can certainly agree that the internal security practices that the military and the NSA were not following the kind of procedures that, frankly, a cupcake store should have for protecting its own internal networks.
Well, there were some security measures in place. When you talk about Private Bradley Manning, formerly known as Private Bradley Manning, and he overcame them with the most simplistic of forms, CDs and Lady Gaga.
Absolutely. He joked about how he was downloading not just ones and twos of files, but literally tens of thousands of files while jamming to Lady Gaga. And in turn, you know, the Snowden, he did everything from, you know, had folks sharing passwords with him to he was working in one cell, but gathering information from all different sides. So, you know, it should have been a massive anomaly showing up in the system in terms of the traffic. And then, of course, the downloading of that information. And, you know, again, this is something that actually these were procedures that they were supposed to be following, but they hadn't yet gotten around to implementing them. But again, it's not just the kind of procedures that a NSA should have. It's the kind of procedures that everything from a corporation to a human rights group needs, because guess what? We all face threats out there of very different kinds, very different shapes and forms, you know, everything from, you know, the classic Nigerian prince fraud to someone trying to steal credit cards to government agencies trying to penetrate to steal information, you know, targeting everything from defense companies to human rights groups. I work in a think tank. We were targeted as well. Mm-hmm. To, you know, these layers, what I'm getting at here is that there are things that can be done, and yet this topic area is one that we mystify too much. We think it's too technical. And the point of the book is to try and push past that and explain to people, you know, how it all works, why it all matters, what should you fear, what should you not fear, and here's what you can do about it. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that your think tank, the Brookings Institute, has been targeted. I have to ask you this. Isn't there a chance that you and your co-author, Alan Friedman, have potentially invited some sort of cyber backlash? I mean, not necessarily with any malice, but just to say, hey, we got the guys who literally wrote the book on cybersecurity.
I hope that you saying that doesn't actually incentivize that. But look, yes, in a certain way, but we're also all under some kind of threat, some kind of action. I would hope, though, one of the things that we've in the book, I think we are not being judgmental and are, in fact, far more empathetic towards some of the hacker collectives out there than the discourse that's been there. So as an illustration, when we explain the ignorance level that's out there, we talk about, you know, an episode where a U.S. military officer, you know, tried to tell me how Al-Qaeda and Anonymous are the same thing. That's just patently false. That's just absolutely wrong in everything from their means, their ends, their organization, you name it. And instead, in the book chapter where we explore what Anonymous is and how it does its approach, I think it helps people understand these groups that are out there. But the bottom line is that, yes, anyone who is online, myself included, at some point will have some kind of attack on them, some that they may know about, others that they don't. And hopefully we are all better prepared for it. But that's one of the things that we have to face. And again, we need to change our mentality from this because it's not just the direct impact of the attack, but it's how you react to it. It's frankly a lot like if we think about normal forms of terrorism. You know, think about the difference between the British approach of, you know, keep calm and carry on, mm-hmm. versus our approach to some of these issues in the U.S. And it carries across to discussions of, you know, cyber terrorism. Cyber terrorism, as we explore in the book, there have been more than 31,000 articles in everything from mass media to academic journals about the phenomena of cyber terrorism. Mm-hmm. There have been zero people actually hurt or killed by cyber terrorism.
So do we strike it off the list then as something we don't need to worry about?
No, I mean, there are real dangers. You know, we wrote a book about it, but it's about approaching this with both awareness and balance. There are certainly dangers. The other example would be the power grid going down danger that we all, you know, talk about in the narrative. Well, guess what? Squirrels have taken down the power grid more times than the zero times that hackers have. Now, does that mean that will never, ever happen? Absolutely not. We have the potential here. And in the book, we explore, you know, everything from the new type of weaponry that's out there, that Stuxnet illustrated, to the wide range of actors, you know, from be they terrorist groups to state actors like a China and the United States that are engaged in building up cyber warfare capabilities. But it's all about understanding the differences between them, the risks associated with them, and then having a balanced response to them. And the best way, to go back to what we were talking about before, the best way to be taken advantage of is to not understand that. And the best way to misapply resources is to follow the hype rather than the facts.
Sure. I don't think we can discuss your book and cyber war without talking about the relationship in this sphere between China and the United States, and in particular, the emergence of cyber espionage. You make it clear that it's not necessarily about the theft of political secrets anymore, that we've moved on to a more alarming concern, that of intellectual property, in particular, the hall of Chinese hackers.
I would argue there's no more important state-to-state relationship for 21st century security, stability, you name it, than between the two great powers of the U.S. and China. And yet, as we explore in the book, this issue of cyber is driving a divide between them that other issues are not. When we talked with both U.S. and Chinese officials, they would explain how, you know, look, we don't agree on be it trade topics or human rights or border disputes, but we know how to do the dance. When it comes to cyber, we're at a loss. And there's this great anecdote of a senior U.S. diplomat who is negotiating with the Chinese on cyber issues and asks us what an ISP is, which is, you know, a lot like going off to negotiate with the Soviets during the Cold War, not knowing what an ICBM is. Mm-hmm. And so this area is driving that. It's not just the ignorance, the confusion over, you know, basic terms, different interpretations and fears between information attack and what do they mean. It also connects to large-scale economic security questions. And that's just as what you noted, this massive campaign of intellectual property theft that's emanating from China. By one measure, it's the largest theft in all of human history. What's being stolen is everything from, you know, our classic definitions of intellectual property. So the designs of everything from the most sophisticated jet fighters stolen from aerospace companies to a small furniture maker in New England that had the design of a chair that it wanted to sell stolen. But maybe even the greater value has been penetrating into negotiating strategies and the like. So we've seen everything from oil companies to soft drink companies that were preparing to engage in negotiations, a bidding war and the like, and they'd get hacked. And guess what? The other side would know exactly what they were going to bid and, you know, either be able to top them or reject them and the like. And so when you're talking about things like, you know, an energy company, these are literally billions of dollars, maybe tens, hundreds of billions of dollars being lost. By one measure, this might be as much as a trillion dollars worth of value going out the door in all these different ways, shapes, or forms. And of course, then the campaign is connecting to other areas, like we explore the incident where the New York Times was hacked. And it was not hacked because they wanted to, you know, find out, what was the New York Times going to charge for its newspaper the next day. Sure. What they were going after, interestingly enough, was who in China was speaking to New York Times reporters about corruption in senior government leaders' families. Basically, the New York Times was exploring a story about how come senior government leaders' families are so rich in China. And so this government-linked group went after them to try and find out, okay, who's spilling the beans? And this is just this enormous, important issue. As we joke in the book, China appears as often as cats do, because you can't talk about the internet without talking about cats. You can't talk about the future of the internet without talking about China.
Well, let's talk about the future of the internet. And you close out the book by looking at some of the coming cyber trends and cyber security challenges. And you use the term the Internet of Things, which happens to be maybe our second cat reference of the interview, or third now. What is it, and why could it cause such a major security headache in the future?
The Internet of Things is this incredible, awesome transformation of the internet and how we use it, and most importantly, in a way that will ripple out on the real world. So think about it this way. Cisco has said that, in effect, over the next 5 years, we'll see roughly 40 billion new internet-enabled devices link up. So when you're talking about those numbers, it's no longer, you know, you and I communicating with our devices, me emailing you from my computer to your iPhone or the like. It's devices that range from refrigerators to cars to things we haven't yet even dreamed, haven't yet been invented. And they're all coming online, and they're having conversations without us, without the humans. So we're already seeing little micro examples of this within certain networks. You know, if you've bought a new car recently, and say the brake pad's about to go out, your car, without you telling it to, will automatically communicate to the manufacturer, who will then automatically make an appointment for you at the local dealership. The next step on that is you're driving home in your car, and when you're 10 minutes out, it will automatically communicate to your smart thermostat. Guess what? Google just recently bought a smart thermostat company for $3 billion, which shows, you know, the kind of value they're putting in this. Your smart thermostat, which knows you're about to come home, will change the temperature in your house from the most efficient setting, because it's been linked to a smart power grid, and we want to save money, we want to be environmentally conscious, and then it'll change to the setting that you actually like it at. So you have this entire network of things interacting, all because they're online. Amazing efficiency, all sorts of great new steps for everything from, you know, quality of life to the environment. But of course, it comes with certain threats. So to use that car example, we've already seen car hacking, where people have hacked a car. Cars now, you know, have hundreds of computers in them to cause the car to do something other than what the driver wants. So the Internet of Things will be this incredible change out there, but it also comes with new security concerns that we need to understand.
And finally, can you buy the book with Bitcoin?
Right now, it's available through both the publisher and bookstores and your Amazon.coms. So it's up to them to figure out whether to allow Bitcoin or not.
Peter W. Singer, who co-authored Cybersecurity and Cyber War, What Everyone Needs to Know. Thank you so much for talking to us on FSN Reports.
Appreciate you having me on.
And that's the end of this special edition of FSN Reports. A reminder that you can contact the programme by emailing us, reports@featurestory.com. And you can follow us on Twitter. We're there at Feature Story. FSN Reports returns tomorrow with the latest news and features from our bureaus here in the US and around the world. That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington, alongside producer Simon Marks. For everyone with Feature Story news everywhere, have a great evening. Goodbye.